Hour number two of Overtime, Fan Run Radio, Jake Miller, John Dunn, Max Pennell. We're going to be joined by J.L. Steele here at 720 for our weekly NASCAR segment. We call it Fast Friday here on Overtime. I feel like we might be one of the only stations in the state of Tennessee, unless you're in Bristol, that actually has a dedicated NASCAR segment that lasts longer than a minute. Something I'm kind of proud of now. I've got to meet a lot of, not necessarily meet, but I've got to interact and talk with a lot of people because of this sport where you just turn a wheel to the left and it goes vroom vroom, apparently. No athletic ability involved, right? No athletic ability at all. No athletic ability at all. Even though
it takes a lot, man.
Man, I'm telling you, I tried to explain this to a lot of people. It's like, yeah, you lose about 15 pounds of water weight per race. It's like, you get in the car, you might weigh 150. You're going to weigh about 140, 135 by the end of the race. That's how much you're sweating. That's how many calories you're burning.
A lot of folks that harp on NASCAR drivers and cheerleaders and things like this say, well, those aren't sports. These are the same people that get short-winded when they walk to the fridge. So I don't put a whole lot of stock into this. So.
Oh, and then that turns into, hey, honey, can you grab me another beer? That's what that turns into.
As long as it's a Yingling Golden, that's all that matters.
I mean, that's about the only thing you can really have at this point. There's not much left that's American-made that we can buy and we can enjoy. Yingling is one of them.
Have you tried the Golden yet?
No, I'll be honest. Had a little bit at my reunion, my high school reunion, and that's been kind of on a dry spell, not going to lie.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, but the weather's warming up, and the lake's starting to become, you know, the primary destination for pretty much every evening if it ain't the golf course. But, hey, you can drink at both of those places. But when it comes to Pilsner, man, I'm definitely a Yingling Golden guy. I'll bring you a case or something sometime, man. I'm telling you, it's the best beer I've ever had.
Central PA beer.
Oh, yeah.
Brewery in America. You know why?
Why is that?
They're not the oldest, but during Prohibition, they sold ice cream to stay open.
Really?
So now they can claim they're America's oldest. Yeah. You can still find it in Pennsylvania. You can buy Yingling ice cream. It's weird, but yeah.
I'm intrigued. I want some. Yeah.
It's not like beer flavored or anything. They just make
regular ice cream.
Just to keep, I guess it was to keep the lights
Dude,
on.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's actually really, really cool. Let's go back to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. It is Friday. We're going to be talking some NASCAR. I want to talk to Tommy. What do you say, Tommy?
Hey, how boys doing this evening?
Good, buddy.
All right, man. I'm glad to hear it. You know, I've never tried one of them, what do you call it, Yinglings. I've never tried it. I've heard everybody have good reviews on that. I might have to dabble in that this weekend.
I'll be honest, man. I almost never buy it, and I'm sitting here wondering why I don't, because I really like the stuff. They have a light. They have the regular. It's all good.
Yep. What is it like? Is it like Michelob, about $9 a six-pack?
No, more affordable than that.
Yeah, it's a little bit more affordable.
Yeah, and typical Yingling is real dark. I mean, I'd probably compare it closer to, I mean, I'd say it's closer to Guinness than it is Michelob Ultra.
But it's darker than a Bud Light or a Bud Heavy. But it's smoother.
Yeah, Sam Adams is a good comparison, yeah. Honestly.
Yes, that's a really good comparison.
That sounds about right up my alley.
You might enjoy it.
You know, the Colt 600, that was probably one of the far best mile-and-a-half races we've seen at that track in a long time.
I really enjoyed it. And, you know, we talked with JL, and we've been saying this for a while. You know, Ryan needs to win. Ryan Blaney needs to win, and he got it.
Exactly, and he had the fastest car on the track. I mean, William Byron's pit crew kept him in it. And I tell you, a car who probably could have been up there without all the pit road penalties was Bubba Wallace. I mean, every time they hit pit road, it was a tire rolling out, a car falling off the jack, or, you know, being boxed in. And he still ended up out of there with the top five. Bubba Wallace is—he's turned it on these last few races. It's pretty good to see that 2311 car, you know, perform as well as it has.
And I think it has to do a lot with the guy that he's racing for. You're racing for Michael Jordan, a guy that hates to lose. He's already lost faith in the Charlotte Hornets, about calling them Bobcats. But he's lost faith in them. He knows that he can win in this sport, given the backing that he has, who he's affiliated with. Michael Jordan knows that he can win in NASCAR. And you're carrying around that number. If you have anything distinguished with a number 23 and it involves Michael Jordan, your expectation is to win championships. There's no question about it.
Oh, exactly. And that's why, you know, him and Denny Hamlin, you know, Denny Hamlin's always wore the Jordan brand through his career. You know, a lot of guys had Under Armour or Puma or whatever brand was supporting these fire suits and these uniforms, and he's always been the Michael Jordan brand. He's always had the Jumpman on there.
I'll tell you what, that 45 car, it looks sharp this weekend.
That is what I was fixing to say.
That Jordan brand car.
But that baby blue with the Jumpman on it, I mean, it was simple. There was nothing spectacular about it, but it was beautiful, and it was fast. He was up front a majority of the race, and he come out with the top five.
Tyler Reddick doing everything that he can to try to will that car to win. And, I mean, the thing is, Tyler's a great driver. We've known that for years. I mean, that goes back to the Xfinity Series. But
yes, sir.
Tyler's going to be one of these guys. He's going to put himself in contention to win a title one of these days.
He reminds me a lot of Kyle Larson, their driving techniques of how they can run the wall. Like you said, their Xfinity Championships. No, he won one for JRM Motorsports, you know, Dale Jr.'s team. Then the next year goes out and wins one for Richard Childress, doing the exact same thing, you know, just running the wall at Homestead and just getting it done. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Kyle Larson. I think there's a bright future for him, especially with the way 2311 is coming up, you know, with Toyota. Now, it's going to be interesting to see when Legacy Motor Club, you know, with Jimmy Johnson and them switching over to Toyota this year, which blew my mind how Chevrolet
Ooh.
Let Jimmy Johnson go.
Ooh. Whoa. Oh. Jimmy Johnson, in anything other than a Chevrolet, that just seems, I mean, that's almost as
wrong.
Bad as, like, when Kevin Harvick, you found out he was going to be driving a Ford.
Exactly. But you look, it's kind of unreal how long it took for this to happen. I mean, you look since Toyota's come into the sport and how successful they've been with Gibbs, and then you put 2311 out there. They've got, what, three or four wins now with that team. But when we go to the plate tracks, they have to pit with either the Chevrolet or the Fords. They don't have enough cars in the field to, you know, be up there with a manufacturer support.
That's on Joe Gibbs. It's on Toyota.
So my deal is with that. So, okay, we're going to add 2 to 3 more cars for Toyota. Are they going to get the same support as Gibbs in 2311? Absolutely not.
No.
Just like Rick Ware does not get the same support from Stuart Haas. Spire, whoever, does not get the same support from Rick Hendrick. That's why you see this, you know, this playing field kind of show its, you know, dominance at the end of the races.
Right. I mean, and back in the day, of course, you had Dodge, you had Toyota, you had Ford, you had Chevy, and
Pontiac
was there for a while. And, you know, it was a lot easier to be one of these smaller teams and actually make it in the sport. Nowadays, if your name is not Rick Hendrick, Joe Gibbs, Tony Stewart, you can throw Roush in there or Penske. Good luck. That's all we can say to you is good luck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe one of y'all could tell me this. Richard Petty back in the day, so y'all know I'm not a huge NASCAR guy. I like dirt track, smaller racing.
Oh, you'll love JL. That's his stuff.
So, I've listened to him before. He is very, very knowledgeable, and, I mean, the dude knows racing. I mean, it don't matter what guy. He probably knows sack racing, man. He loves that stuff. But so maybe y'all can tell me a little bit about this. Richard Petty, he used to drive a Plymouth, wasn't it?
Yes.
That one with the big old wing on it?
He drove a lot of different brands. But
that's when Dalton kicked out with the 426 Hemi because nobody could they couldn't manufacture an engine that could keep up with that engine, so that's why Dodge stepped away from that.
See, I like that era of racing right there. I like the Bobby Allison days of racing, Richard Petty, all that stuff, you know, back then. Back when they would just fist fight each other over the minor
Kyle Yarborough, all them guys.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Those boys right there. That's racing to me, man. And, you know, I grew up, you know, watching Sterling Marlin, Dale Earnhardt, Jeff Gordon, you know.
Legends.
Rusty Wallace. I mean, shoot, it's just some of the biggest names in racing. And I feel like it's so different now, man. It's hard for me to get into it.
If it makes you feel any better, it's a little bit harder for us to stay in the sport.
Yeah, like me and Jake and JL talked before, I mean, a lot of the issue, you know, you had your backwoods, you know, self-built guys come up from nothing and get in the sport, and they run in bad cars, and then all of a sudden they get the opportunity to run good cars. You look at Jeff Burton, you look at Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, all them guys, before they was in their iconic cars in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, they was coming up from nothing. But what kills me is when you get a legacy driver like Jimmy Johnson, like the Colt 600. He finished dead last. He spun out by himself twice. You're a seven-time champion, 84, 85 career wins. Why would you want to kind of tarnish your legacy coming back doing this?
That's crazy stuff. So what I want to hear is y'all's pitch. So pretend I'm somebody that ain't never seen NASCAR before. How would you sell this modern era of NASCAR to somebody that just hasn't followed it?
Well, what you need to do is you need to go watch a truck race and watch an Xfinity Series race. Those are going to be your two most exciting series. Really competitive. The cars are faster in Xfinity, or they have higher horsepower than what they do in the Cup Series. I feel like that puts on the best racing. JL would agree with me. But then you're going to watch it on Sunday, and you're going to be confused. It's like, wait a minute, why do they not have the same horsepower as the Xfinity Series? Like, isn't this supposed to be the top of the line? Aren't these supposed to be the best drivers in the world? Aren't these supposed to be the cream of the crop? Why are they not doing it? You're going to be confused. But I do encourage you to watch an Xfinity Series race. I really do. They're fantastic every week.
So when I was growing up, it was the Winston Cup, and they had – I can't remember what they called the
Busch Series.
I think it was Busch. The Busch Series. So, I mean, and the Busch Series, if I'm not mistaken, they went about, 10, 15 miles per hour slower. So have they've inverted that now is what you're saying?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Xfinity Series, your lower tier series actually puts on, like Jake just alluded to, they put on a hell of a lot better racing. And because they kind of stuck with the traditional old car, I mean, it doesn't have the diffuser. It doesn't have the big stupid wheel with the single lug. It's not sucked to the ground. These guys actually have to drive this car. It is aero, I don't know what you call it. I mean, if you run up on somebody and suck the air off of them, it does manipulate their car. These cars that we got in the Cup Series, I mean, you can just run up there and bump somebody, and, I mean, nothing changes. But real quick, guys, I know we're getting short on before J.O. gets in here. Our boy, Corey LaJoie, he's been fighting for a spot in a competitive car. We was hoping it'd been in the 48, you know, when Alex got out and Josh Berry got that deal, but now Josh Berry's signed over to take over the Ford car for Stuart Haas. And plus, he's in Portland, I think, this weekend, so that'd kind of be impossible to happen. But Corey LaJoie, he's going to drive the 9 car at Gateway. I'm excited to see this for him, and I hope and I pray that he has a great showing, because that could absolutely elevate his career.
I hope he goes up there and he kills it, man. And John, Max, this is a guy. So the way it works in NASCAR, essentially, and Tommy, you'll agree with this, is if you've got money coming up, your dad's going to put you through the sport. You're going to get these big-time rides, and you're going to get sponsors because there are usually big wigs in these companies, and you're going to get these rides like you hear Chase Elliott having, William Byron having, Kyle Larson, guys like that. The younger guys, that's how it works. Corey LaJoie, he didn't really have all that, and he didn't get the same chances that a lot of these guys get. You'll see that. You'll hear us say that a lot. It's like, well, this guy has talent. He's just never been given the same opportunities that that guy got. Like, you'll hear us talk a lot about Ross Chastain. Guy's a watermelon farmer, for crying out loud. And he got a chance in a very, very, we'll call it mid-car. And he did work. Like, it was fantastic. Like, he should not have been running as good as he was with that equipment. And then he gets a chance in good equipment. And it's like, oh, my goodness, we got something here. And now he's been put in a very competitive cup car because it's like, I was finally given just that one chance, and I took advantage of it, and now I'm going to be set up for a while.
Absolutely. I hope he does a great job. You was talking about, real quick, no, I know we're up against it. Another guy's in that damn situation, Justin Allgaier.
Yes.
You know, dominating Xfinity Series, cup chance he got. He was in crap, you know, equipment. Matt DiBenedetto.
Crap after crap.
And he elevated them programs. But I'm going to hop off here, and I'm getting ready. Listen, JL, guys, I appreciate y'all letting me on here. I hope y'all have a great weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Yes, sir. Appreciate the phone call,
you
Tommy.
Too, brother.
Stay with us. JL Steele, our NASCAR expert, joins us next right here on Fan Run Radio. Back here on Overtime Fan Run Radio, pleased to be joined by my good friend JL Steele, our NASCAR expert here at Fan Run Radio. What's up, JL?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. My first question for you is, as I was listening these last several minutes, I wish I had been listening longer, who's the guy that grew up in the golden era of Bobby Allison and Darrell Waltrip and Earnhardt?
That's our new co-host. That's the kind of stuff that he watched. That's the kind of stuff that he loved. John, he's on here with me, but he grew up around the same time I did. You know, we got to experience Dale Earnhardt, Sterling Marlin, and guys like that.
Well, I was listening to him, and I just thought, oh, I don't even need to go on tonight. Just let this guy keep talking. He's got the right era. I'm glad to be with you guys.
All righty. And it's good because – usually we've got two basketball fans that are usually asleep. Give them about two more minutes and they would be asleep. But here we go. JL, Coke 600, we talked about it for weeks. Ryan needs to win. Ryan absolutely has to win, and he finally gets that win. That was something that hit me first. It wasn't even the Chase Elliott, he's about to get suspended thing. It was Ryan needed to win, and Ryan finally got that win.
Yeah, he not only won, he really – throughout the race, you knew he was going to be a factor at the end if he could stay out of trouble. I mean, he was, I don't want to, maybe dominating is not the right word, but he was consistently up toward the front, and you knew this was a great opportunity. So I'm glad he did, got that monkey off his back. He's obviously locked into the playoffs, and I can't imagine the huge relief that's got to be for him.
Absolutely, and of course, the big thing coming out of this week, another penalty. And this time it involves Chase Elliott turning Denny Hamlin, and it was intentional. It was blatantly obvious. You know, even live, it was like, come on, man, really, what are you doing? Because that was dangerous.
It was. You know, I've seen people, you have too, this week on social media asking, well, what happened to boys have at it? You know, well, boys can't have at it going into the tri-oval at Charlotte at full speed.
No.
And if somebody's not familiar with it, just Google Blaze Alexander, B-L-A-I-S-E, Blaze Alexander got turned totally by accident. It was nothing intentional by Kerry Earnhardt in that same part of the track at Charlotte, and it killed him. And that's, you just don't do, you can do it on a short track, but you cannot do that at Charlotte at that part of the track. That was, there's no defense for it.
Well, here's another example. It didn't kill him, obviously, because he's still racing, but Carl Edwards, Brad Keselowski at Atlanta.
I remember,
That one, I was watching that one live, and I saw where the car had hit and the indention that it made. I'm like, I hope he is alive.
Yeah, very similar. So Chase got what he deserved. There's no defending it. I'm not a Hamlin fan, but you know, he put the graphics out there, what the data showed, and it was intentional. I understand why Chase gave the interview that he did, because then he'd probably be facing a fine if he had admitted to it like Hamlin did quite a while back, but
right.
on top of the suspension. But he was wrong. He's getting punished for it. My only question or concern about it is, if you do something intentional like that and you are suspended for a race, why are you giving a waiver for that? What?
That's a great point.
Let's make this punishment mean something. Let's send a strong message. He's already got one waiver. Now
yeah.
we're giving him another one for something he intentionally did.
Right.
That's what I don't understand.
And the first one, I don't even think there should have been a waiver for that. Yeah, it might have been an accident. Guess what? That wasn't a NASCAR-related accident.
Yeah.
That was something
I know.
He did on his own accord. This one is a NASCAR accident that he intentionally did.
Yep.
And now he's going to get another waiver. I mean, I knew they were going to protect him in some way, but that was one that's like, you know, we're really going to protect him as much as we can. And it's not to the level of the NBA with Ja Morant, but it's still just like, okay, they're going to do whatever they can to protect him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not right. But on the bright side, and I heard y'all talking about this earlier, it's a great opportunity for Corey LaJoie.
I can't wait for it. I'm very, very excited for him. He's a guy that you and I have talked about, you know, just being one of those guys. And I've told these guys, too, you know, you like to cheer for these guys that don't get the same opportunities as everybody else gets.
Yeah.
And for Corey, and a lot of people might have forgotten about this. Do you remember the handwritten letter that he wrote to Rick Hendrick?
Sure, yeah.
Do you think that might have been taken into account when choosing a replacement driver?
Well, maybe. I don't know. But when you look at the options with the Xfinity guys in Portland this weekend and the logistics of getting Josh Berry or anyone else back to St. Louis, what are your options? And who's the best available in the field? And Corey LaJoie has consistently shown he can get the job done. And I'm going to say this. I think Corey's in an unfortunate position. There are a lot of people who dislike him because they weren't fans of his father, Randy LaJoie.
Right.
Okay. I couldn't stand Randy LaJoie when he was driving. I can't stand Randy LaJoie now. I hear him go on podcasts and rewrite history and make up stories about things that happened in the past. Corey shouldn't be judged by that. And I've seen Corey. I was happened to be with Tom Keen. You know Tom with Keen Parts, Corvette Parts. I was with Tom Keen last fall at Bristol. We went up into the Spire Hall, or he wanted to ask Corey, and I may be telling too much here, but I think it shows what kind of guy Corey is. Tom wanted Corey to do something for Tom's wife, TJ, for her birthday. Corey not only agreed, but he volunteered to go above and beyond and do even more, do even extra. He didn't have to do that. He's not sponsored by Keens. He was in the past, but because of the type of guy that Corey is, he offered to do that on his own. And I sat there and thought, you know what? This guy, he's all right. And I was already a fan of him, but he really showed, I think, his character there. And I'm like you. I hope he goes into St. Louis and just puts a whipping on him.
I can't wait for that. I absolutely cannot wait. That's something, as soon as I found out, like I was sitting in the studio out here in our little lobby area, and I just like jumped up out of my seat, kicked the chair back, and just started like, you know, the fist pumping like, yes, yes, he's finally getting a chance.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this is something that we're all looking forward to.
Real quick, I got a question for you too. So I've heard you talking about Blaney. Was it Ryan Blaney that you were talking about?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, back when I did watch racing, there was Dave Blaney. Is that any relation
there?
Yeah.
Yep, Dave's his dad.
Awesome, fantastic, man. It's nice to see. And that's something about NASCAR, I think, that is probably more prevalent in that sport than any other sport, you know, in America is I don't want to say nepotism, but keeping it in the family. I mean, you know, you've got the royal family of NASCAR, the Earnhardts, of course, who did the same thing. And then it just seems like there's probably 10, 11, 12 different father-son combinations that have been in NASCAR.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's another one. And Dave's a great sprint car racer out of Sharon, Pennsylvania. He's dominated for years up in that area. And of course, if you remember Dave, he had a great shot, I thought, at winning Daytona several years ago in the infamous Juan Montoya jet dryer incident. He was leading at the time.
Blew up. Yep.
Yep. But that's Ryan's dad.
So, are you're into dirt track racing and everything too, aren't you?
Love it. Yes, sir.
So are you familiar with some of the tracks throughout East Tennessee?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They had a great race, and unfortunately I wasn't able to make it this past Monday at 411, the Scott Sexton Memorial. Had a great turnout. And let me tell you, by the way, they only charged $10 for grandstand admission to that race, and which is, you know, for any sporting event is a great deal. You can't get a Smokies ticket, at least a decent seat for $10. It went over so well that their next race, I saw them on Twitter. I can't remember if it's July 4th or when it is, but their next big event, they're going to do the same thing, $10 to get into 411.
So I got to shout out my home track up there in Tazewell, Tennessee. Yeah. That's my home track. Actually got an interesting story for you here. My biological grandfather is the only person who has ever passed away on that racetrack. Back in 1973, really? He was practicing. One of his wheels come off. The car flipped, threw him out, and unfortunately rolled over top of him. My mother, only a couple months old. But he's the only person that's ever passed away on that track up there. But I've grown up around dirt track racing. I'm a big, big fan of dirt track outlaw racing. I'm trying to get into NASCAR, man. You guys definitely make it sound extremely, extremely interesting. I'm gonna have to start watching some races.
Well, let me ask you: is Chris Corum still running things up at Tazewell?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I haven't been out there in a while. I actually moved to Granger County when I was about, 13 or 14 years old, kind of drifted out of the area, started going to Bull's Gap a little bit here and there some of my friends to catch some races, White Pine, that area down in there. And, I haven't really been up around the racetrack. The only thing I know about it is what my family tells us. So I've had uncles that race there. Of course, my biological grandfather raced there. I've thought about racing there myself. My mother's got an 86 Monte Carlo that I'm just dying to get my hands on.
Yeah.
Whoever's in charge of it up there, I know that the track is in great shape. They've had fantastic turnouts to all the races. They've been updating equipment. I mean, it's dirt track racing is one of the last bastions of American freedom, I feel like. And, anybody that can should get out and catch one of those races.
I think that's a great description of it. Chris is, I know he was up at Tazewell for years. I hope he's still there. He did a great job. I think he was at 411 for several years, too. Great promoter. His dad raced in that area. And, that's a legendary track. And we're so blessed to be in this area between 411, Tazewell, Bull's Gap, Smoky Mountain, out just west of Maryville. You got I-75. We're just in a great area for dirt track racing. Yeah.
You know, I was today years old when I found out that John Dunn, my new co-host, was into dirt track racing. I've known this guy for a few years now. We've never talked racing at all. And all of a sudden, it takes our NASCAR expert, and it's like, wow. It's like, I never knew this.
Like I said, he's definitely got my interest piqued. The two of y'all listen to y'all talk NASCAR. I don't know. The older I get, the more I'm starting to open up and be more receptive to some of the outlier sports, you know, that aren't basketball, baseball, football. You know, like golf, for instance. I just spent 4 hours on the golf course yesterday hacking it up, getting sunburnt, you know. And that's something I never would have done 3 years ago. You know, NASCAR is another one that I'm very interested in. So you guys definitely make it seem interesting. But dirt track racing, I've always loved it, Jake. Kind of runs in the family, man, like I said. So eventually, if I ever do get a hold of that Monte Carlo there and decide to change it up a little bit, it's an antique. It's got the T-tops. Absolutely beautiful car. I would hate to demolish it for the sake of making it a race car. But if I ever do that, I'm going to enlist the both of y'all to help me out with that.
Well, you've got the crew chief on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines, and you've got your spotter sitting right here in the host chair.
So there we go. Then I'll do all the hard work. And then, yeah, that sounds great. Sounds great.
And then if anything happens, you know, I'm all about throwing fists. I might end up on the ground and with a bloody nose, but I'll at least try.
For what it's worth, Miller, I would take you on my team 10 out of 10 times,
brother. Nice.
So, yeah, there's that. I mean, wow, this turned into a great conversation that I was not expecting to have today. I'm really, really excited about it. And now we got our new producer, Max, grew up in central Pennsylvania. He's familiar with a lot of the dirt tracks they have up there.
Yes.
And,
well, you know, what's cool about that, when I was a kid, I'm talking real young, elementary school, we lived just north of Pittsburgh.
Okay, and it was north of Pittsburgh?
A little town called Zillianople. It's in Butler County.
Okay.
And there was nothing better than going to Lernerville. on a weekend. I know anybody who follows dirt track racing knows about Lernerville. And the best weekends of my life as a kid was when we would go back-to-back nights to Lernerville on Friday and Mercer on Saturday. Great tracks. I don't know if Mercer's still around. Lernerville still is. It's a legendary track. So, yeah, I'm kind of familiar with that area.
Max, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Carlisle, so we have Port Royal not far.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's another one, Williams Grove Speedway, which is a couple miles from me. So, yeah, it's a big deal there. I mean, Port Royal every once in a while get, you know, like Kyle Larson usually goes every year. So they take it serious there.
Sprint cars are big up there, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing. I love late models. And I love late models on all our dirt tracks here. But when you get up in the Midwest and up in the Pennsylvania area, start heading toward the Northeast there, boy, those sprint cars are just something else. They're the show. And I do wish we had more of that here. But, yeah, that's you know, everybody looks at a late model or a NASCAR and says, you know, maybe I could do that. Nobody looks at a sprint car and says, yeah, I could do that. I mean, that's a different breed that runs those dirt sprints, man.
Interesting, interesting stuff. I'm mind blown right now. Like I'm in heaven. I'm just letting it happen at this point. Jumping back, I guess. Guess we got to talk about Gateway.
All right.
Who we taking?
Well, let me say this first of all. We were talking about Corey LaJoie and his opportunity.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but a lot of our listeners may be. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Means was a legendary independent. He ran the number 52.
Yes.
Turtle Wax car and then the Alka-Seltzer car. In 1987, he got the chance to run for Hendrick at Charlotte, the number 25, the Folgers car.
Yes.
This was going to be Jimmy's big break, man. This was going to really make it happen. He got caught up in a wreck about 20 laps in, no fault of his own. Never got another opportunity. Nothing nearly that good. As soon as I heard about Corey LaJoie going into the nine, I couldn't help but think about Jimmy Means. So the first thing I want to see happen Sunday at Gateway is I want to see Corey not get caught in someone else's crap. I want to see him have the opportunity to show his ability in that car. Now, that being said, do you know which driver? I'm going to count the All-Star race.
Okay.
Counting the All-Star race, do you know which driver has four consecutive top five finishes?
Which driver has four consecutive top fives? Is it William Byron?
It would be Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace has...
He is.
If you count the All-Star race, that's four consecutive top fives he has scored. He is hot. He has jumped up into points. He's inside the playoff cutoff line right now. I'm going with Bubba Wallace at Gateway.
I don't hate that pick at all.
He's as hot as they can come right now.
And people are hating on him again. I mean,
well, they always do.
Well, they always have. But, you know, of course, we had the incident in North Wilkesboro with the radio chatter. And am I surprised? Not really. But I'm sure worse things have been said.
Sure.
And, I mean, you know, he does a great job of, you know, tuning it out. You know, I think we've talked about this before. You know, Bubba Wallace, he's not done what Colin Kaepernick did. You know, Colin Kaepernick knew that he was getting out of the sport because he wasn't playing well, and he just made it seem like he was such a martyr. But he never did anything after the fact. Bubba Wallace has never used that as a crutch. It's like, oh, well, I'm not getting these opportunities because of this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get the same opportunities that you do because – I am who I am. No, he's made the most out of every opportunity that he's been given.
And he catches more crap than any other driver on the circuit.
And he always will.
That's right. And there are some that are going to hate to hear that, but it's just a fact, and I can point to countless examples of it. But he is as hot as they come right now in the Cup Series, and so I'm going with Bubba.
And, JL, I know we're running short on time here, but you can even remember back, I guess it might have been probably 2018, maybe 2019, when he was at Bristol, and he took the lead in the 43 car.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. And everybody's cheering him. all of a sudden, mm-hmm. everything happens in 2020, and everybody hates him.
Yep.
All because of one thing that happened. That he didn't even do. Yeah, that wasn't even his fault.
That's right.
That's the one thing that always bothered me about that, is he never really had anything to do with that. And a lot of people don't see that. They just see what the news puts out. And, of course, you and I feel the same way about every news outlet that ever existed. But they took that and they ran with it. And it's like, well, here's what really happened, guys.
That's right.
So, yeah, people just don't care. They don't want to know. They just find the narrative and they go with it. All right. And before you go, we're going to give our weekly free advertising to Bucky's here. So, made another trip. I tried something new this time.
Yeah?
The sausage and cheese collage with jalapenos.
Yes! Isn't that great?
Oh, my goodness. They were amazing. The dough was so soft, and I didn't really know what to expect. But it reminded me a lot of a sausage roll that, like, you get in the UK. Like, when I went over to London and places like that, I tried these things. Yeah. I'm like, oh, these are great. And I tried it, and I'm like, this is the closest thing I've had to that. Ever since I left.
Wasn't it so fresh?
Yes, always fresh.
I know. That's the amazing thing. You know, I had a friend of mine on Twitter the other day, Craig Deadman. He asked me, you know, the one out at Exit 407 is going to open here in a couple of weeks. And he asked if I was excited. I said, well, not really, because I know what it's like when they first open. And I know what the traffic is like at that exit anyway. So I said, it's probably going to be 6 months, maybe a year before I go to this one. So overall, I'm excited, but yeah, I'm not going to try to get into all that summertime tourist traffic at exit 407 to hit Bucky's. We're going to head to Destin in a few weeks, and I'll probably hit the one in Leeds, Alabama before I hit the one here in Sevierville.
That is the home of Charles Barkley and Tennessee defensive line coach Rodney Garner.
Yeah, there you go.
And a lot of people don't know, they're cousins. And I didn't realize it until I looked at the picture side by side, and I was like, oh. Those guys are actually cousins, and you can tell.
Wow, I'm going to have to Google that.
Oh, yeah. Just look up Rodney Garner and then look up Charles Barkley. And if you get the right picture of him in a press conference at Tennessee and the right picture of Chuck on TNT, it's like, wow, one has hair and one doesn't. That's the only difference.
Nice. That's crazy, dude.
Nice. Yeah, I had no idea. Learn something new today.
Learn something new every day. Everybody learned something new today. I'm very, very happy about this. And JL, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for the relationships I'm starting to develop outside of this show and this segment that we do every week. I've actually had a few conversations with our guy, Woke Steve. Awesome dude, by the way.
Good guy.
Go follow him at Woke Steve Phelps on Twitter. JL, tell us where to find you.
Well, I'm mainly on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, but I don't even remember my handle on that. On Twitter, I'm at JL_Steele, STEELE.
JL, thank you so much, man. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the races.
Yes, sir. Yes, that is JL Steele making his weekly appearance here on Overtime on Fast Friday. Stay with us. Final segment of the program coming up right here on Fan Run Radio. Final segment of the week. It's Overtime. It's Jake Miller, John Dunn, Max Pennell, Fan Run Radio. John, you got some explaining to do, man.
What can I say, man? I like Dirt Track.
Dude, that was probably my favorite interview that we've ever done with JL.
Man, listen, I have listened to him. I've been excited to talk to him and everything, man. I've listened to him. He is a great guy, man. You can just tell he cares about the sport, man. He's down to earth and genuine too. It doesn't get no better than that, man.
Oh, it was fantastic. Now, you and Bryson, when he comes back into town in the fall, you and Bryson and I need to grab lunch, because Bryson's a big dirt track guy. It's like, we need to set up something with me, you, Bryson, and JL. We all need to go grab lunch and just talk about racing.
We all need to go to a race. We all need to go to a dirt track race, man. That'd be great.
Well, we're all about 411. We're all about the Taz. We're all about Bulls Gap. I mean, we can make that happen.
Hey, it's just like JL said, man. We're blessed to live in an area where, you know, if we want to go see
you're
a dirt track
too,
race.
You're invited too, Max.
Thank you.
We can go anywhere. Yeah, Max, you're coming too. That's a given.
But the one thing I encourage you to do this weekend, obviously they're in Portland for the Xfinity Series. Watch the Truck and Xfinity Series, and then watch the Cup Series. Tell me which one is better.
Yeah, I'm going to check them out for sure this weekend, man. I was just sitting here thinking about that. It actually sounds kind of nice for some odd reason. I've never just been like, hey, you know what? Sitting down for a few hours watching a race sounds pretty good. But it does. Weirdly sounds pretty good. So I'm gonna give it a shot. I'll report back on Monday with what I've seen this upcoming weekend.
Well, it's something too, like basketball, you have to be engaged the whole time. So it's like you have to eat before, you have to eat after. Football's the same way. With NASCAR, you can enjoy a meal. You can enjoy a beer and watch the sport.
Somehow my papa always managed to watch the race with his eyes closed. He was always somehow watching. It didn't matter. He'd been there snoring just as loud, sawing logs, just as loud as anybody else. You go to reach for the remote on a Sunday while you had the Sprint Cup race on or the Winston Cup race on, he'd shoot right up like a rocket. I'm watching that. Papa, you're laying there snoring, man. What are you talking about? He's like, no, I'm watching it. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, he'd perfected it.
Now, I will say, if they were at Pocono, I would tell you all not to watch that race. I hate that track.
Is that one of the street, like one of the course tracks?
It's the triangle track.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no way, dude. So I'll say this, too. I have always loved Bristol. So I've actually went to NASCAR races, and it was Busch races at Bristol a couple times. Man, it's always been a great time. I was really – so back in the, I guess, early 2000s, I was a big fan of Jamie McMurray. You might remember him.
Jamie Mack.
Yeah, man, I was a big Jamie McMurray fan, and I went up there and watched him. So I watched him in the Busch race. He drove the number one yellow car. Is what he was driving, and man, he tore it up in that Busch race that day that I went, and I was hooked from that moment on for Bristol. It's a great track, man. Whether you like racing or not, I mean, it's what they call it, the world's fastest quarter mile. So, I mean, that place is unreal, man.
That place, you know, it's funny because I actually took my fiance. We didn't go to Bristol for her first race. We actually went to Martinsville, up in Virginia, and she's like, so. This means we're going to Bristol, right? And I'm like, yeah. She loves Bristol.
So Martinsville's a small one too, right?
Yeah, they're both half miles. One's a paperclip and one's a more traditional.
Yeah, so half mile. I thought it was quarter mile for whatever reason. That's obviously drag racing. But anyway, I really want to go to the big ones, Daytona, Talladega. I think everybody should see those, you know, once, you know, if you're a sports fan, period, that's like going to watch the Super Bowl, you know, or something, or going to watch the World Series or the World Cup or whatever in NASCAR, you know, the Stanley Cup, what have you. So I think I'm going to eventually try to get down to Talladega. That'll probably be my first one, you know, my first big race. And then try to get down to Daytona. My papa, like I said, my late papa, he would talk about it all the time. And he was a huge NASCAR guy, man. He liked Sterling Marlin. He liked, you know, that generation of race car drivers there, man. And my mamaw, she's absolutely obsessed. I mean, listen, obsessed with Richard Petty. She's got probably $30,000, $45,000 worth of Richard Petty memorabilia just sitting around. You'd be in heaven, Jake.
Oh, I very well might be. It's nowhere near the collection that I have. I've got a little bit. Nowhere near that much, though. I guess my favorite piece that I have, it's actually the Wiback Pack car that Trevor Bayne drove in the Xfinity Series, the number 60.
Love that. I'm a big Trevor Bayne guy, too, man. I think that kid's awesome.
But my favorite car that I have, my diecast cars that I have, is the number 3 Dale Earnhardt Jr. Oreo car that he drove in the, the Busch Series. The Oreo car was it.
Just talking about Dale Jr. Yes, you know, everybody's running around, raise hell, praise Dale. You know, that just made me think about the Dale Earnhardt, you know, both of them, senior and junior, man. Back when Dale Earnhardt was still racing, and, you know, I feel like, you know, Jeff Gordon and all that stuff was going, I feel like that was probably the best era. Probably not my favorite, but probably the best era of racing, man. I mean, I think that's when the sport gained the most traction throughout its history, too. Guys like Dale Earnhardt really bringing some people into the sport, and Jeff Gordon and the like. So, I mean, man, that was racing. I hope that it's something like that, but I'm excited. I am. I'm excited to check it out.
Well, and you got to think, too, we've experienced two drivers that have changed the championship system in NASCAR. There's the Jeff Gordon rule, because Jeff Gordon would have had 7 had they never changed the point system. Then they changed it because of Jimmy Johnson, because he was going through his summer slump, and then he just came alive in the fall and won it. And he still won another championship after that.
Unreal watching him race, man, growing up, Jimmy Johnson. It seemed like, and that's kind of, I think, what took me out of it a little bit. Because my
mom, won five straight.
Yeah, I mean, it was my everybody in my family was a big, big, big NASCAR guy or gal. And, I mean, watching Jimmy Johnson just win the – I mean, it was like watching Alabama win national championship year after year after year. It just kind of got mundane. And I don't know, man, maybe it's different now. The parity, you know, just the way it is now might just make it a lot more interesting. But, like I said, you guys really piqued my interest with your conversation. It just got me back in touch with my dirt track roots a little bit. And we'll see about this weekend.
And one more thing that on the NASCAR subject, I want y'all to formulate an opinion on this, and we'll talk about a little next week. You know, we talk about Richard Petty and his 200 wins. You know, Kyle Busch has now surpassed that between the trucks, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series. Who has the most wins in the modern era of NASCAR? That's current format, 40-plus drivers each week, 36 races a year.
Has to be Johnson.
Nope.
Denny Hamlin?
Nope.
Carl Edwards.
Jeff Gordon.
Oh, man. Well, that was like my next three guesses.
And
so.
And he did it in multiple generations of cars, because the cars have changed over the years as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And say what you will about Jeff Gordon, man, but he helped transcend the sport. He really did. I know my Aunt Honora was a huge Jeff Gordon fan. So, I mean, he really did do a lot for the sport, whether you like him or you hate him. There's no in between, though.
No, you either love Jeff Gordon or you hated Jeff Gordon. He was the guy. And I'll never forget when he passed Dale Earnhardt, because Dale had 76. When Jeff Gordon got win number 77 in Talladega, they littered the track with trash. They were so mad that it came at that track of all tracks.
So that race was at Neyland, you said?
Talladega. Yeah, basically at Neyland, yeah.
No, man. So have you ever seen that clip of Dale Earnhardt? He's sitting there. I think it's like a little infomercial. I don't know if it's real or not, but he says something to the effect of, you got to always be aware of your surroundings and look out for your fellow driver. And he's like, always be courteous to your fellow driver on the track. If they're coming up and something, get over. And he's like, unless it's Jeff Gordon, you put that bleep in the wall. If you ain't seen that, man, look it up. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Dale Earnhardt was a character.
Oh, my goodness. We got to run. One more thing for everybody to look up. If you want just pure entertainment, look up Ward Burton cat skid steer commercial. Watching him try to say cat skid steer, and he had that old redneck. I don't even know if it was a speech impediment, but he talked like one of these old school rednecks out of Virginia. He could not get it out to save his life.
Oh, man. It's hilarious. I've seen that one.
Oh, man, that's going to do it for us. John, thank you, sir.
Appreciate you. Have a good weekend, brother.
Thank you, Max.
Take care, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Something else coming up next here on WKGN. Tune in on Monday for 3 and Out right here on Fan Run Radio.